Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 9. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tasmai svalokam bhagavan sabhajita sandarshayam asaparam nayatparam vipeta sankvesha vamoha sadvasam sradrisvadbir purushai avishtutam. The personality of Godhead, being thus very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare. So yesterday I expressed my subject matter. So we're in the section of the Bhagavatam where Sukadeva Goswami is answering Maharaj Prickett's questions. And we're in the section where the second question is asked. The second question is, what is the Lord's form in transcendence? What is the nature of the Lord in transcendence? The way Sukadeva Goswami is going to answer this question is by describing the story of when Lord Brahma performed tapasya in bhakti yoga and saw the Lord's form. So he told this story, and he told how because Krishna was pleased with Lord Brahma, he revealed his form. Because he was pleased with his performance of devotional service. The austerities that he performed were devotional service. Because he performed those austerities for the satisfaction of the Lord. He performed those austerities so that he would get the power and shakti to create the world, which was his service for Krishna. So because he worked so hard and made such an effort, he pleased the Lord, and therefore the Lord revealed his form. So this story is going to be told to answer the question. Practical practices. My habit is I get up in the morning, I don't take bath initially. I take bath after I chant for a couple of hours. So I was seeing that I'm very comfortable, you know, sitting here with the quilt over, and it's very comfortable. But then I saw that I really have to be serious, and I was thinking of Lord Brahma. I have to take that sound, not just sit there comfortable, Hare Krishna, but to focus my mind. Prabhupada gave me the mantra, and I have to take it with all seriousness and put it in my heart and concentrate on that mantra. So this is the example of Lord Brahma. He heard upashrinot. He heard the sound. He took that sound and he executed it. And that was his tapasya. He could not find out the source, but with determination he executed the penance. 1,000 years of the years of the demigods. So he took that order seriously. He took the sound coming down in disciplic succession very, very seriously. The mantra, the order, the instructions. Tene brahma hidaya adi kavye. Within the heart that came very seriously. So now I'm going to go very quickly. So this was the result So now we see the result of his penance. The result of his penance, because that penance and austerity he performed, it wasn't for his own self-aggrandizement. He wasn't performing austerities to get praise or to get personal powers, but he's performing austerities to get the Shakti to serve Krishna. So Krishna responded. It wasn't just he got the benefit of his own powers ascending, but he got the mercy of Krishna. And therefore, Krishna being pleased, this verse describes it, with his penance, manifests Swalokam, his own abode. So therefore, this is the example is given, therefore his penance was bhakti yoga. Because how did he get a transcendental result if it wasn't devotional service? How did he get Krishna's mercy if he wasn't serving Krishna? So he got Swalokam. And this penance, even though it was arduous, because penance means to accept some inconvenience, still the nature of penance in bhakti yoga is that it's very, very, it's pleasing. Because there's some love behind it. The example I remember is when I did this preaching program once in the Indian Military Academy, and I met the principal of the Indian Military Academy. I didn't have much time to preach, but I have that spirit. So I was working in the Gurukul, and if I got a day off here or there, I'd go someplace. And somehow I got this name of this principal and the Indian Military Academy, and he actually became a devotee. He actually came and joined here. But at that time, we didn't have funds to maintain him, and he was still a bit of a family man. He retired and came here. So I was coming back, and I was quite pleased, and I was in an Indian bus, and I was in the back of the bus, which is the worst seat, and I was like, you know, my dunda kind of, you know, scrunched up in the corner, you know. One village lady was breastfeeding her child on my right side, and a 75-year-old Indian village man with tuberculosis coughing was on my left side. You know, and I was kind of, you know, in the back of the bus, and the dust was flying. And I was feeling so satisfied in heart, because I was thinking, why am I doing this? And I'm doing this for Prabhupada. So the austerity became, it had a sense of pleasure. And also the austerity in bhakti yoga, and these are the points that Prabhupada brings out in the purport, the austerity, it bears a fruit. There's a very sweet fruit, and that's you get Krishna. Sometimes when Krishna is taking away from us, if we just tolerate as Krishna is taking away, you'll just understand that what Krishna is doing is he's giving himself. So our austerities have a nice fruit. Now there's one sentence here that I haven't figured out. Mother Narayani, executing bhakti yoga is exactly like sitting on the lotus sprouted out of the abdomen of the transcendental personality of Godhead, for Lord Brahma was seated there. Anyway, you could look at it and think about it. We can think about it for tomorrow. And then Prabhupada also quotes the Krama Samdarbha, that the Swalokam is above Brahmaloka. It's above the highest planet in the universe. And it's worshipped by Swadrishtvadibi, by those who have perfectly realized the self. So because they perfectly realize the self, therefore they enter into Krishna's personal abode. If you imperfectly realize the self, you can merge. But those who have Swadrishtvadibi, who have realized they've seen their own self completely. So this abode is worshipped by those people who are complete in self-realization, perfect in self-realization. And Sankleśa, they're free from all miserable conditions of life. You can enter the Supreme Lord's abode when you're free from Sankleśa. All kleshas, kleshas means causes of suffering. And what are the causes of suffering? Ignorance, material conception, attachment, hatred, absorption. And therefore you can therefore see the Lord. And of course Prabhupada quotes from Brahma Samhita, Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Viksha. In that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence in, or nor is there any of their influence in goodness. There is no predominance of the influence of time, so what to speak of illusory external energy? It cannot enter that region. Without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. So I mentioned before, these descriptions of the Lord describe the abode of the Lord as opposite of the material world. So there's, in page 148, there's a quote by Jiva Goswami that we can know from Narada Pancharatna that the transcendental world or Vaikuntha atmosphere is rich with transcendental qualities. These transcendental qualities, as revealed through the devotional service of the Lord, are distinct from the mundane qualities of ignorance, passion, goodness. So it's distinct. It's something different. And it's our objective. Now, because I've been studying the second canto in depth, I realized that two other times there was descriptions of the spiritual world. So this is a common tattva or truth that we have to understand. The nature of the Supreme's abode, our goal. The first time it's mentioned in the second canto is description of the contemplative yogi when he goes through the universe and he achieves the stage which is called Labdho Prashanti. He attains peace. And there, same thing is mentioned. There's no influence of time. When I was in college, I had this one devotee friend, and I think every summer he would bloop, kind of speaking. He would kind of stay with me and visit me, because he was a very brilliant fellow, and we went to college together. I met devotees with him. And he was a very eccentric person, very brilliant. So I remember I had a little black clock, and when I woke up one morning, he had put a little piece of white tape on it. And on the white tape was written, "Time I am, the destroyer of the worlds, and I've come to engage all people." Just think how oppressive time is. Excuse me. How by the force of time, everything is being taken away from us. Our very body will be taken away from us. The force of time, disease comes. The force of time, old age comes. The force of time, politics come. Because time, again, is moving matter. So you see the force of time. So it's mentioned there, and then again it's mentioned when there's a description of the Purusha Shukta, which is basically the universal form. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "By a spark of my splendor, I pervade the whole universe." So then Arjuna says, "Well, show me that form." That's the universal form. So that's also described in chapter 6. And then Krishna says that, you know, all the vibhutis, all the powers in the world are coming from me. But I remain transcendental and aloof. And then at that time, when Lord Brahma's explaining to Narada Muni the creation, then it specifically mentions tripad vibhuti. That this universal form is the ekpad vibhuti. It's the power of Krishna in the material world. But there's the tripad vibhuti, the world of deathlessness, where there's no passion, no ignorance, no time. Here in this verse it says, rajat tamas pravartate does not avail, kala vikrama na, not the influence of time, uttamaya, there's no illusion. So this is described very, very nicely here. And the word here that in the purport is very significant is tayo mishram. The goodness in the spiritual world is not mixed, tayo, both of them. It's not mixed. There's a commentary, I think, by Sridhar Swami. The quality of goodness, which is mixed with passion and darkness, is not to be found in Vaikuntha. But goodness pure and simple exists there. So here it says that nor is there's no influence on goodness by passion and ignorance. But in the material world, mentioned yesterday, all goodness is mixed with the modes. Even goodness, the symptom is peacefulness. We become attached to peacefulness. Become very disturbed when people are upsetting our peacefulness. So always passion and ignorance enter in. And it's free from Maya. And this is consistent with what the description in the first canto of God, that his abode is Narasta Kuakam. Kuakam means illusion. It's completely bereft of illusion. This world is all illusion. It's not that it doesn't exist, but it gives an appearance of reality. Maya, not this. And the appearance in this world, what we're seeing is we're seeing the illusion that things are separate from Krishna. We don't see God in this world. That's Maya. Our sense gratification covers the spiritual existence, and therefore we don't see God. But in the spiritual world, there's no Maya. So you see God, and you see everything in relationship with God. And there's no passion, so there's no creation. There's no ignorance, so there's no annihilation. Then there's no creation, there's no annihilation. That means that everything's eternally existing. So there's no material time. So this is the nature of the spiritual world that's being described. Now also here, someone asked yesterday about this Asura, Archita, that he's worshipped there by both the demigods and the demons. So how are the demons in the spiritual world? All I can repeat is what Prabhupada says here. The Lord is the chief leader there, without any competition for leadership, and the people in general, all followers of the Lord. It is confirmed in the Vedas that the Lord is the chief leader, and all other living entities are subordinate to him. For only the Lord satisfies all the needs of everyone else. So I don't know if that's a description of the spiritual world, how the demons get in. Now, it describes the inhabitants, how beautiful they are in the spiritual world. Shama, Avadatta, glowing sky bluish complexion. Shataputra Lochana, lotus flower eyes. Pishanga Vastra, beautiful yellowish clothing. Swarucha, greatly attractive. Sapaciousa, youthful, growing youthful. And they have four hands, and it says money, pearls, praveka, of superior quality. Suvarchasa, effulgent. Niksha, abharana, ornamental medallions of beautiful colors. This is the spiritual world. Some of them are effulgent like coral and diamonds in complexion and have garlands on their heads, blooming like lotus flowers. And some wear earrings. The Vaikuntha planets are also surrounded by various aeroplanes, all glowing and brilliantly situated. These aeroplanes belong to the great Mahatmas, or devotees of the Lord, and therefore Prabhupada describes these aeroplanes. They're made of Brahman. They're not made of machines. There's not some kind of, like, you know, Siddharji mechanic that comes out in the spiritual world and tries to fix your car. So Prabhupada, one time when he came to the West, and when some reporter asked him, do you believe in flying carpets? Prabhupada said, yes, you know, something like that. Then the reporter said, then why didn't you come on a flying carpet? You know, and Prabhupada said, I wanted to become one with you. You know, something like that. The ladies are as beautiful as lightning because of their celestial complexions. And all these combined together appeared like the sky, decorated by both clouds and lightning. So the beautiful complexion of the ladies, the aeroplanes. So it was a beautiful sky that was decorated with clouds and lightning. There's another description of the spiritual world described in the Bhagavatam, where Krishna enters Dwarka. And it's a very, very beautiful description, because the Lord's you is described like a monsoon cloud, Shama. And his umbrella is like the sun. And his, the chamara, because they're fanning him, is like the moon, and the yellow garments are like the rainbow. So it's the monsoon cloud, the rainbow, the sun, and the moon. And this is Krishna's beauty is inconceivable. Material manifestation, you can't have these all together. So this is the spiritual world. The goddess of fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet and being moved by the black bees, followers of spring. She's not only engaged in variegated pleasure, service to the Lord along with her constant companions, but is also engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities. So you have the goddess of fortune in her beautiful form, and she's serving the Lord. And it says she's being moved by the black bees. So what I understand like this, the black bees, they're taking honey. So they're, there was, when I was young, I somehow or other, you know, all my friends like rock and roll music. But I had no interest. But I had one album that had like seven classical songs. And one of them was Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee. This is it. I used to like Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee. In fact, Dado, I think when I go back, I will get this song.
Take me with you.
I will. And we will sit in my mother's house, and we will watch Charlie Chaplin films all night. I'm revealing some innermost desires of Dadu. He really likes Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, those pictures were really witty and humorous. City Lights and Modern Times and all that.
We have to, I'll bring video back one time in Roger Shekhar's place during Sandhya Arti. We'll watch Charlie Chaplin. I know. I'm just... The goddess of fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving... So the bees, they're getting the honey, but they're also making the like a nice sound. So it's the same way. She's engaged in variegated pleasure with Krishna, and she's also engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities. So beautiful. Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the eternal, entire devotee community. The Lord of the goddess of fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, the Lord of the universe, and who is served by the foremost servitors like Nanda, Sunanda, Prabala, Arana, his immediate expansions. So the beauty of the Lord is also the beauty of his devotees. This is also described in the Bhagavatam, that there's a reciprocation in the Bhagavad Gita. There's such a nice reciprocation between the Lord and the devotees. It's like when you put it, what is it? You put a diamond in, what is the diamond go? What? In gold. So the diamond, if you put the diamond in gold, the diamond makes the gold look better and the gold makes the diamond look better. So there's this reciprocation. So there's always the Lord's devotees. This word, because I'm following the Sanskrit as much as I can. This is throughout the Bhagavatam. There may not be a phrase that describes Krishna more than the word Satvatampati. He's the Lord of the devotees. Very nice verse here. So the darsha means he was seeing. Darsha tatra kila sattvatam pati shriyam patim yagyapatim jagat patim sunanda nanda prabalahana dibi saparshadangrai parishevatam vaboom. The personality of Godhead seen leaning favorably towards his loving servitors, his very sight intoxicating and attractive, appeared to be very much satisfied. He had a smiling face decorated with an enchanting reddish hue. He was dressed in yellow robes and wore earrings and a helmet on his head. He had four hands and his chest was marked with the lines of the goddess of fortune. So this is the yoga peet, or the particular place where the Lord is in audience with his eternal devotees. This is called the Yoga Peet. And for Vaikuntha, it's described in the Padma Purana. But also there's descriptions of the Yoga Peet in Braj, where Krishna gives audience, and Krishna's sitting, and then he's surrounded by the Astaka Sakis, and they have their assistants, and it's a very intimate. So these descriptions. So here we see in Vaikuntha the Yoga Peet. And it's very nice. Britya Prasad Abhimukham. He's favorably facing with affection his loving servitors. And his sight, Asavam, is intoxicating and prasanna, very much pleasing, very much attractive. And he's appearing very, very much satisfied. And therefore he has a smiling face, Aruna Lochana, with a face decorated with a chanting reddish hue and dress. So these are the descriptions. The Lord was seated on his throne and was surrounded by different energies like the 4, the 16, the 5, and the 6 natural opulences, along with other insignificant energies of temporary character, but he was the factual Supreme Lord enjoying in his own abode. So Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and he has Shaktis or energies, but he's Shaktiman. He's the possessor of those energies. Jadmad yasya yataha. It is from him whom everything else is coming. So Lord Brahma, he saw Krishna seated on his throne, endowed with so many opulences, so many energies, so many Shaktis, Shakti be empowered with. And the 6 opulences is he's richest, powerful, famous, most beautiful, greatest in knowledge, most renounced, the creative energies, Prakriti, Purusha, Mahatattva, Ahankara, and then other insignificant energies. And what are the insignificant energies? The mystic siddhis. And then Prabhupada says that this verse shows that the Lord has unlimited potency. The yogi is also dependent on him for their potency, these mystic cities. But the unalloyed devotees, they don't want any of this. They don't want any of the Lord's cities or powers. They just want to serve him. Lord Brahma, thus serving, just seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his fullness, was overwhelmed with joy within his heart, and thus in full transcendental love and ecstasy, his eyes filled with tears of love. He thus bowed down before the Lord. That is the way for the living being, Paramahamsas. So he got the darshan, and he was overwhelmed, ahlada, with joy, antara, within his heart. And he was rishyat, full in ecstasy, and prema bhara, in full transcendental love. And therefore, in this state of high ecstasy, what happens is when you see the Lord, it manifests in bodily symptoms spontaneously. This is called sattvika bhav. So tears come from the eyes. And then the love in the heart, it inspires one to render some service. So he bows down before the Lord. Now, Prabhupada specifically describes this in a very nice way. This is, the verse says, Paramahamsa. It is the path of the Paramahamsas. So this is described in Bhagavatam, that the path of the Paramahamsas is Bhakti Yoga. Dharma, Kaitava, Projita, Tra, Paramo, Namatsaranam Satam. That Bhagavatam is for people who are not envious. When you're envious, you compete. The reason why we take the body is because we want to get things to make ourselves powerful and enjoying. So we're competing. It's not just to enjoy, but it's to become better than others. It's not just that we want to enjoy sense gratification, but we want to enjoy more sense gratification than others. So we can have that sense of superiority. So that's the real consciousness in the material world, that I want to be better. I once saw this one devotee, and another devotee came to him with something, and the devotee looked at me and said, "You shouldn't think you're better than everyone or anyone." Devotee is free from this envy. He doesn't want to compete and get ahead. He just wants to be the servant. And therefore, the Bhagavatam is for such people because it helps you to become the servant, not the Lord. There's no fruit of gain from the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada describes also, even becoming one with the Lord is envy. It's not Paramahamsa. So this Paramahamsa path is described. It's bhakti yoga. It's chanting and hearing about Krishna. It's searching out the association of a bona fide devotee and hearing this transcendental message with faith and conviction. This is the Paramahamsa path, bhakti yoga. Because it's the path of becoming more and more a servant of Krishna. Just imagine our goal is to feel materially worthless. Our goal is to feel very, very humble and insignificant. Not to feel great. Our goal is Trinada Pi Sunichena Torora Pi Sahishnana. Amanina, madanena, kirtaniya. One should think oneself lower than the store in the street. More tolerant than the tree. Devoid of all sense of false prestige. Ready to offer all respects to others. This is the Paramahamsyam path, the path. And by that path, one conquers Krishna. And Prabhupada gives this very, very beautiful verse from the 10th canto to show how Krishna, who's ajita, becomes conquered by one who abandons this path of trying to become great, either in the material or spiritual sense. Jnani payasam upa udapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukkaratam pavadhyavartam. Sane stita shrutakatam tanuva manubir ye prayaso jitichato pyasitais trilokyam. Lord Brahma said, "O my Lord Krishna, a devotee who abandons the path of empiric philosophical speculation aimed at merging in the existence of the Supreme and engages himself in hearing your glories and activities from a bona fide sadhu or saint, and who lives an honest life in the occupational engagement of a social, can conquer your sympathy and mercy, even though you're a jitta, who gives up these other paths and just engages in the path of chanting and hearing about Krishna. Gives up the path of philosophical speculation to become great. I know more than everyone. I am God. Gives up the path of fruit of intention. I have more pleasure. I have more power. Just chanting and hearing. After seeing Brahma present before him, the Lord accepted him as worthy to create living beings, to be controlled as he desired, and thus being much satisfied with him, the Lord shook hands with Brahma and slightly smiling addressed him thus. It says, Kare Sprishan, he touched his hand, he was shaking his hand. Why? It says, Priyam, Prithamana. Priyam Prithamana. It says he became pleased because of his priyam, because of his love. And what was Brahma's love for Krishna? His love for Krishna is that he knew that the material world was a place to rectify the conditioned souls. And he knew that his service was to create this world. And therefore, because he had this service, he performed great austerities out of love, so he would be empowered to create the material world. So when he saw Lord Brahma, who had performed these austerities to become a power, and he saw that he became worthy to create the living beings, and worthy to be empowered and controlled by Krishna, and thus being satisfied, he shook his hand. And Prabhupada said this, another reason he shook his hand. because he not only created the material world, but he had his own party to preach, which is the Brahma Sampradaya. So he also started his own Sampradaya. Anyone, however, there are many renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya whose only business is to make men more forgetful of the Lord and thus entangle them. Anyone who ever, however, preaching the mission of the Lord in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya is always very dear to the Lord, and the Lord, being satisfied with such a preacher of the authorized bhakti cult, shakes hands with him in great satisfaction. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Tayaham Toshita Samyag Veda Garba Sivikshaya Chiram Britaina Tapasa Dishtosha Kuta Yoginam. The beautiful personality of God had addressed Lord Brahma. O Brahma, impregnated with the Vedas. This is how, oh, he was impregnated. Tene Brahma Hidaya in the heart. I am very much pleased with your long accumulated penance for the desire for creation. Hardly I am pleased with this pseudo-mystics, kuta yoginam. Su means good and ku means bad. So the ku yogis, the bad yogis. And what's the difference? The difference is the good yogis, they perform penance for self-realization. And the bad yogis, they perform penance for sense gratification. So there are many mystics who, they're attracted to these yogic siddhis, and therefore they perform austerities, like Hiranyakashipu. Prabhupada said even the example of penance undertaken to discover nuclear weapons. The Lord wants every one of his parts and parcels to attain eternal life and bliss by coming home to Godhead. And the whole material creation is meant for that objective. Brahma underwent severe penances for that purpose, namely to regulate the process of creation so the Lord may be satisfied. But those who do not utilize Vedic knowledge for that purpose are known as kuta yogis or pseudo-transcendentalists. In other words, they're performing austerities, but not for the spiritual purpose. Varam varaya badram te varesham mabhi vanchitam brahman shreya parishrama pumsama darshana bibi. I wish you good luck, O Brahma. You may ask from me, the giver of all benedictions, all that you may desire. You may know that the ultimate benediction, shreya, pumsam, for everyone, as a result of all penances, this is simi by realization. So the shreya pumsa, the ultimate success is darshan. The success of adbi, the limit of success is darshan of Krishna. The limit of success is the spiritual world where there's no maya. So you actually see Krishna face to face. That's the goal, the ultimate. Purport, the ultimate realization of the Supreme Truth is knowing and seeing face to face the personality of Godhead. Realization of the impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma features of the personality of Godhead is not the ultimate realization. When one realizes the Supreme Lord, one does not struggle hard to perform such penances. The next stage of life is to discharge devotional service to the Lord just to satisfy him. In other words, one who has realized and seen the Supreme Lord has attained all perfection because everything is included in that highest perfectional stage. The impersonalists and pseudo-mystics, however, cannot reach that stage. Any questions so far? The highest perfectional ingenuity is the personal perception of my abodes, and this has been possible because of your submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance according to my order. Okay. Any questions? I think we're going to stop there today.
only talking about the sense of superiority materially.
Yeah. Spiritually means you're not the body, but you become one with God. Prabhupada mentions that in Nectar Devotion. It's still that envy is there. It's still that competition, but it's accomplished in another way. So it's not really the Paramahamsa path.
Varam paraya badram te paresham ma vivanchitam pramanchaya parisrama pumsam madarshana darshana vadi.
I wish you good luck, O Brahma. You may ask from me, the giver of all benediction, all that you may desire. You may know that the ultimate benediction as a result of all penance is to see me by realization. The same point is confirmed again. Must be important. The highest perfectional ingenuity, manishita, has something to do with ingenuity. The highest perfectional introspection and thought and understanding and intelligence is anubhava, the personal perception, mama loka, the personal of my abode, of my dham. This is the highest thought and it's the highest perception. Both is there. You can actually see my abode. And this has been possible because upashrutya, because you are hearing very, with dedication, because of your submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance, according to my order. So, this is the highest. Prabhupada says, the highest perfectional stage of life is to know the Lord by actual perception, by the grace of the Lord. You can't be in the Lord's presence unless your heart is completely pure. Otherwise, there's no question. That's the highest perfection. This can be attained by everyone who is willing to discharge the act of devotional service to the Lord as enjoined in the revealed scriptures that are standard and accepted by the bona fide. So this is upashrutya. It's possible by discharging and following what you hear by the acharyas and the Vedic literatures. When you do that, and then Prabhupada describes, this is what the Vedic literatures say. Sarva dharmam prityaja mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam. That you serve Krishna with all heart and all soul. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaro. So this is the perfectional stage. The word manishita is significant. Everyone is falsely or factually proud of his so-called learning, but the Lord says that the highest perfectional stage of learning is to know him in his abode, devoid of all illusion. So manishita, thoughtful. This is the ultimate perception and thought. Pratyadishtam maya tatra tvai karma vimohita tapo me hidayam sakshad atmahan tapasanaga. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance when you were penance is my heart and soul, Hridayam Sakshat Atma. And therefore penance and I are non-different. So this, you know, because what penance is the Lord's internal potency for a devotee. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim asrita. When you stop taking shelter When a devotee stops taking shelter of the impulses of the body and mind, which are previous sinful reactions to how to enjoy this world, he's getting his karma. When a devotee stops taking shelter of that, then he takes shelter of wanting to follow the dictates and will of Krishna. And when you have the strong desire to follow the dictates and will of Krishna, when you want to satisfy Krishna's desire rather than your own selfish desire, then you come under the shelter of the internal potency. This is our process, that as our desire in bhakti increases, bhakti means that adau shraddha tata sarusang. It starts with shraddha. So what is shraddha? Shraddha is some appreciation for service of Krishna. This is the first thing. And this comes by some mercy of the devotee and some agata sukriti, some type of service, you get an appreciation. And when the appreciation increases, when the shraddha increases, shraddha is bhakti. There's no difference in Krishna consciousness between shraddha and bhakti, because the shraddha is that appreciation that I should give Krishna pleasure. You may not, initially you may not do it yourself. It may be a parent who says, this is nice, or someone appreciates a devotee. But somehow they have some appreciation. If it thickens, then that shraddha is called sadhu sangha. That it's so nice, it's so much appreciation to give Krishna pleasure that I want to be with people who are doing that. And then when it increases, it becomes adau shraddha tata bhajana kriya. I not only want to associate with people who are doing it, but I want to take up the practice to nourish and increase this within my heart. And that appreciation just doesn't become an intellectual thing. And that faith doesn't become some theoretical thing that it's good, but you actually like to do it. You actually are getting a taste for it. And then when it increases further, then it really, when the shraddha increases, it becomes anartana vritti. That you like it so much, you'll give up things that have no value to the service of Krishna. And then it increases, then it becomes nishta. Becomes very fixed. You do it all the time. And when you have such an attraction for serving Krishna, see, our shraddha is not just this theoretical thing that I trust it's good, but you're also experiencing that it's good. And when it becomes nishta, then there's ruchi, or taste. It's just like the example I was thinking how to explain this, because in the Bhagavatam, when the progression is described, it's described that nishta comes as tadaraj, ruchi comes as tadarajas tamo bhava kamalabhasthyatye, that you get rid of passion and ignorance. So my understanding, I thought of an analogy of water. When something is just water, it has taste. When you take water from the Himalayas and Rishikesh in the middle of summer, coming out of the mountains, you understand masaham apsu kantiya, that Krishna says, I am the taste of water. But when it comes down the plains and it starts getting mixed with some minerals, some salt, just a little bit, the taste is not there. So bhakti, the taste comes when you're fixed, when it's only bhakti, when it's only devotion. Then you get some taste. And we experience this. If we're in passion and ignorance and then we're performing our practices of Krishna consciousness, and there's no taste. But when we actually get into it and we become steady and it's concentrated, then there's some ruchi or taste. And then after practicing in ruchi, then it's ashakti. And ashakti means deeper attraction, where ruchi means that when the mind goes to sense gratification, you pull it back. Ashakti means that the mind is not going towards sense gratification. If it does, it spontaneously comes back to Krishna's service. And when you are practicing devotional service with that desire, with that intense desire, desire is like a voice in the heart. Desire is a voice in the heart. So when that voice in the heart that I want to give Krishna pleasure, I want to serve Krishna. When it's very, very loud, because there's no other voices in the heart. I want sense gratification. I want fame. I want prestige. I want... When it's so strong and concentrated, that desire attracts Krishna's mercy. And then Krishna facilitates that desire by the dissension of the internal potency into the heart. And that's called bhava. So here, he says, therefore, penance and I are non-different. Because you actually get the Lord's internal potency by giving up the impulses of the material senses because of that strong desire to serve Krishna. And Brahma started with that desire to serve Krishna. That was his penance. He wanted to create because he knew that the creation is for the enlightenment of the conditioned souls, which is the purpose of this world. So he wanted to do it. So Prabhupada said, such penance is the internal potency of the Lord and is non-different from him. This is my understanding of what it means, this penance. It's the internal potency. And then Prabhupada continues on this. And therefore you can't enjoy the senses, a sense gratitude, and go back to Godhead at the same time. But you can't, you have to, your desire to serve Krishna has to be strong. So it's not mixed with other things. And then there's also a verse that Prabhupada quoted from the... But by engagement, by devotional service, one becomes detached from this enjoying spirit. The living entities are encaged in the conditions of material bondage because of their propensity for overlordship. So when you give up this sense of overlordship, that means you're embracing the mood of service, and that's why it's the internal potency. When you give up this mood of overlordship, control, it's described before. That's why it's the Paramahamsa path, because you're giving up the essence of the material consciousness that I want to control, I want to become greater, I want to be God. This envy, competing for that position of superiority and enjoyment. So when you give that up, that's the greatest austerity one can perform. And that austerity is devotional service. Other things are easier to give up. But to give that up. And therefore, you know, we see what is the essence of you know, when you really become a devotee, then you want nothing for yourself. You would no praise, Trinada peace, Niche, Natarora peace, Hishna. You have that consciousness. You give up that sense of false prestige. This is the essence. So therefore, it's the internal potency, because if you give that up, if you actually can renounce that, and then Krishna looks at, oh, you want to be my servant? In the heart, bhava. I'm getting exhausted just thinking about giving up my false ego. The devotees automatically become detached from worldly enjoyment, and this detachment, okay. Therefore, the penance of devotional service includes knowledge and detachment. You just want to serve Krishna. And that is the manifestation of the transcendental potency. In the CC, it is said that if someone sincerely wants to see the Lord, and at the same time wants to enjoy this material world, he's considered to be a fool only. One who wants to remain here in this material world for material enjoyment has no business entering into the eternal kingdom of God. The Prabhupada brings some other interesting things here because, so, you know, if you want to be the Lord and the Master and the Enjoyer, then you can't go to the Lord's abode. You just don't fit in there. And this material world is dharga. Dhar means difficult, ga means to go. You're restricted. It's a prison house. But it's a prison house where the police, it's so sophisticated that the police, you don't have to do anything. It's just your criminal consciousness and you're separated from the citizens of the spiritual world. Automatically. Just by your consciousness. I want to be the Lord and Enjoyer. Boom. You're restricted. So if someone becomes a devotee, and wants to enjoy still, then the Lord favors him. everything. We all know this well. There's not a person here who hasn't suffered greatly. Except Dadu, he gave it up willingly, along with his shoes. The Lord favors such a foolish devotee by snatching all that he may possess in the material world. If such a foolish devotee of the Lord tries to recoup his position, then the merciful Lord again snatches away all that he may have possessed. But such repeated failures in material prosperity, he becomes very unpopular with his family members and friends. In the material world, the family members and friends honor persons who are very successful in accumulating wealth by any means. The foolish devotee of the Lord is thus put into forcible penance by the grace of the Lord, and at the end, the devotee becomes perfectly happy being engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, penance in devotional service of the Lord, either by voluntary submission or by being forced by the Lord, is necessary for attaining perfection. And thus, penance is the internal potency of the Lord. The process I'm doing now is I read it through the Sanskrit, and then I look where the words are in Prabhupada's purports and see what points. Now, and then when you get, you see how his points are connected. It's very interesting. I'll just tell one joke. It's a Jewish joke. Anyway, it's just, I don't know if you'll get it or not, but the Jews are known as the chosen people. They really believe they're the chosen people, but through the history, they've tortured and suffered more than anybody else. So one guy, finally, Jewish guy, gets up and he sees God. So he looks at God, and he's a guy from New York, and he finally meets God, and he gets his darshan. He says, "I have a question to ask." God says, "Yes." He said, "Is it true that we're the chosen people?" And God said, "Yes." And he looks and he says, "You mind choosing someone else next time?" So sometimes you feel that way. I remember one devotee here that left, and he was undergoing so much purification that his image in Vrindavan was that Krishna was practically behind the bush, and then I think like jumping out and throwing pies in his face. It was like he was getting so much purification. Now, just to show you how Prabhupada brings out this point about this penance and the internal potency and the connection between the unalloyed service of Krishna and giving up the material world, Prabhupada just quotes, and what's wonderful now also in the study is that when you study Bhagavad Gita, then you know all the paraphrases to the verse, then you can further. So Prabhupada quotes such an apropos verse, Yesham Twantakatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmana Te Dvandva Mohan Nirmukta Bhajanti Mam Jirhavrita. When you're freed from sinful reactions and you become pious, then Bhajanti Mam Jirhavrita, then you can do your bhajan with fix. And what a sinful reaction. Sinful reactions are previous, the desires and impulses that are coming from you are your previous sinful reactions. So you're trying to do your bhajan and the desires come and the anger comes and the prestige comes and the disturbance comes. So unless you give up those desires or become purified of them in some way, you can't have that Mat darshana vidhi, that darshan of Krishna. So Krishna is working for that. Srijami, therefore, it's very interesting, Prabhupada's last word, therefore only love and penance combined can please the Lord, and one is able to contain his complete mercy. He directs the sinless, and the sinless devotees attain the highest perfection of life. And you actually see in Vrindavan, if there's, you know, sometimes I knew this one disciple of Sanatan, of Krishnadas Babaji. His name is Sanatan Das. And did I ever give you one of his tapes? I'd like to give you one of his tapes. So he's been in Vrindavan, you know, for 40 years, and, you know, and he has some bhakti. I definitely has some bhakti, like his guru Krishnadas. And just see the way he lives. You know, you can see that It's focused. That's all he wants. I mean, to live in Vrindavan really means that we have to live like the Goswamis. And you can see that Krishna sees that effort. Srijami tapasai vedam krisami tapasapuna vibharmi tapasa vishvam viryam me duscharam tapa. Duscharam tapa. Not only penance, but duscharam me, by my severe penance. I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. In executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead, must decide to undergo all types of tribulation for that end. Even for material prosperity, name and fame, one has to undergo severe type of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in the material world. My grandfather used to work like 18, 20 hours a day when he first came to America. You know, people, they had those objectives. Why then are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants one to see how painstakingly the devotee is in devotional service. The order is received from the Lord, either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master. And to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. But again, as mentioned in the first verse, when it discussed Lord Brahma, or maybe, you know, when he saw Svalokam, by his austerity, he saw Svalokam. And then Prabhupada said, it's not like the austerities of the Mayavadis, because the austerities of Mayavadis, there's no bhakti in it. And therefore, you don't get the spiritual goal, and while you're doing it, there's no pleasure. There's nothing into it. But devotional service, there's a pleasure in it, and the pleasure is, it's not you're performing your service. You're serving Krishna. You're working hard. So there's love in that devotion. So there's, you know, so when you perform devotional austerity, when you get the order to spread Krishna consciousness, to deepen your internal Krishna consciousness, to execute devotional service, and you do it with seriousness, then there's a pleasure in it. Because you'll only do it with seriousness if there's some bhakti or devotion. There has to be some bhakti, some bhava in that. So you see, our austerity becomes very blissful. Very blissful. It's just like if you take a vrata on a kadasi of more chanting. Or I could see like Kartik. I'm most blissful during Kartik because I'm absorbed in devotional service. And it's not that I perform austerities, but I increase my chanting. I go bathing in the Jamuna every day. I go in Parikram. So you can see what the austerity is. The austerity is that you're not engaged in activities of lordship of the material world. There's no time. You're chanting, you're going to the Jamuna, you're going on Parikram, you're doing your activities. You know, so that's actually the austerity. There's actually pleasure in it. Of course, I'm doing it here sitting in Vrindavan with what I'm doing now, but people preaching Krishna consciousness, serving, taking the order. We just have to be very, very thoughtful to actually understand the order and not mix the order with our own food of intentions. Actually understand the order. Actually understand what that order is. Because it's too easy to mix our service with our own ambitions and desires. Okay. Pramo vacha bhagavan sarvabhutanam adyaksho vastito guham vedaya pratirudhena prajnana chakirshitam. Lord Brahma said, O personality of Godhead, you are situated in everyone's heart as the supreme director. and therefore you are aware of all endeavors by your superior intelligence without any hindrance whatsoever. So you're in everyone's heart, you're aware of anything, but still I'm going to ask you something, even though you know. but it'll give me an opportunity to glorify you by explaining, avastitam guyam, guham, deep in the heart you're situated, Bhuta, of all living entities, adhyaksha, as the director, he certainly, Veda, you know, chakirshitam, the endeavor, praganena, by your superior intelligence. And aprati rudhena, without any hindrance. So, again, Prabhupada, because he says you are the adhyaksha. Is that the right? Did I pronounce it right? You are the, adhyaksha. You're the director. So you're the director, but without any hindrance. So Prabhupada describes this from Bhagavad Gita in a very interesting way. Adhyaksha, what does it mean? Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. You're supervising everything. Adhyaksha also means with the eyes. So you're the director, you're the supervisor. So you're supervising everything. But although you're supervising everything, apratirudhena, you're without any responsibility or without any fault. And Prabhupada gives the example, in a prohibited area, habituated drunkard puts forward his application to the director of drinking. And the director, considering his case, sanctions only a certain amount of liquor for drinking. Similarly, the whole material world is full of many drunkards, in the sense that each and every living entity has something in his mind to enjoy, and therefore everyone desires the fulfillment of his desires very strong. So the example is he sanctions, but he's not responsible for your drink. So Krishna sanctions, but he's neutral, so he's not responsible. So Prabhupada wants to bring that out in the purport. And So he's asking, he wants to ask something. It means he has a desire. Lord Brahma has a desire, but his desire is pure because the desire is to serve the Lord. That's not a personal desire. There you go. In spite of that, my Lord, in spite of you knowing everything, I am praying you to kindly fulfill my desire. May I please be informed how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all. So he wants to understand the Lord. And that was what was mentioned right at the beginning, that Lord Brahma, by his non-deceptive penance, understood the Lord. Atma-tattva vishuddhi. He was free from any misconception about atma-tattva. So he wanted, basically what he wants is he wants some bandhagyan. He wants to understand the Lord perfectly. He wants to understand perfectly his relationship with Krishna. Now, in the next four verses, it's like little coming attractions, are the four questions that are asked, which are the four questions that are asked, which are the response is the Chatur Shloki, the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam. So the first one is, what is your form in transcendence, which is the question that Maharaj Prickett asked. Now the second question is, and please inform me how you, by your own self, manifest different energies for annihilation, generation, acceptance, and maintenance by a combination and permutation. So how do you manifest your different energies for the creation and maintenance of the world? Because he has to do this service himself. You manifest different energies and how they combine. Hmm. Now, the next question. O master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. Later, this question is listed as, how does the Lord play with his energies? And the other one was, how are the different energies working, and how does he play with his energies? So you can see how this is an inspiration to speak the Bhagavatam, because basically, as mentioned before, that's what the Bhagavatam is. The Bhagavatam is the Sambandhi Gyan, the relationship between Krishna and his energies, and then how the living entity engages in service. Now, this is interesting, as explained. By the inconceivable energy of the Lord, every creative element has its own potencies, known as the potency of the element, potency of knowledge, and potency of different actions and reactions. Now, this is from the section on creation. Every element has its own potencies. And what's the potencies? The potency of the element is Dravya Shakti. This has to do with the creation. The potency of knowledge is Jnana Shakti. In other words, the three things in creation are the organs of the senses, which is the Kriya Shakti, the sense objects, which is the Dravya Shakti, and the Jnana Shakti, or the supplier of the elements for the senses, which are the demigods. Haribo. We'll be finished in about 5 minutes. You hear something, go ahead. Okay. By a combination of such potential energies of the Lord, there is the manifestation of creation, maintenance, etc. I'll read on. So, by the grace of the Lord, a devotee like Brahma, or one in his chain of disciplic succession, can understand the almighty personality of God, eternally engaged in his transcendental pastimes in the region of his different energies. Very interesting how these questions are asked. I've never studied it so deeply, but just seeing now how the Bhagavatam is actually manifesting. Now, this next question is really the most relevant and really the basis of the Bhagavatam. Please tell me so that I may be taught in the matter by the instruction of the personality of Godhead and may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities. How we can act instrumentally, in other words, how we can act as Krishna's servant, how we can, in other words, do work. Look, Brahma is, he wakes up, he's sitting on the lotus, and here it is. By the grace of Krishna, you just got the biggest managerial position in the universe. You're the, you know, and Prabhupada, and the Prabhupada describes what he has to do. Was it here? No, it's in another purport, maybe. In one of the purports. Factually, Brahma does not create living entities. In the beginning of the creation, he's empowered to give different bodily shapes to the living entities according to their work during the last millennium. Not only according to their work, but their desires. See, he has to give a body, and then he has to create this, put this machine together, where the body moves perfectly for the living entity's enlightenment according to his past karma. What a machine he has to create. It has to move according to the subtle consciousness of the living entity to purify him. And then he's got to put it all together so that everything coordinates, so that your actions fit into someone else's karma and put the right people together and move it. This is what he has to create. What? A monster piece? I was thinking it's a monster piece. He has to create this whole thing in the universe. Poor Lord Brahma.
That's why he
was the And that's why he became Haridas Thakur. Better be beaten in 22 marketplaces than be the governing body commissioner of the material world. I've had enough with it. He just didn't want that anymore. Because it's so, you know, to have to move this and move that and put it together and not think I am the controller, I am the... So he wanted to know how to do this. And the answer how you can do it is that you have to have bhava and devotion in your heart so that your work becomes devotional in that spirit. And the example we had was the best example we have, I'm not saying it's the only example, was Prabhupada, who is, you know, running the movement. But, you know, Shruti Kirti, you told me about Prabhupada's schedule. You know, he was running the whole movement, but you know, he still got up and he translated in the morning and he took his afternoon massage, you know, and he ate peacefully. And then he said after lunch, he played harmonium and sang, you know, he, because of that deep internal sense of Krishna consciousness, he can move and act, but how to do it? And the answer is, if you want to be in the material world and you don't want to become entangled by all your activities, you have to have sambandha gyan, you have to have abhideya gyan, and you have to have priyojan gyan, which is the answer to these questions. Oh, Master, please tell me. So how to create... it says, Sridhar Swami, navadheyam, that word is... So I'm not, badhyayam, na. So I'm never conditioned. What is the necessity of knowledge regarding the truth? This is Sridhar Swami, because creating the creatures of the universe by the Supreme Lord's grace, I, Brahma, shall not become attached to the conception of individuality. I want to act instrumentally. I don't want to have the concept that I, hankara, I am the doer. How to do it? So you need knowledge so that you won't be bound. He doesn't want to become... Brahma doesn't want to become a speculator dependent on the strength of his personal knowledge and conditioned to material knowledge. Everyone should know in clear conscience that one is, in the execution of all activities, an instrument. An instrument. And Prabhupada quotes 10:10 and 10:11. That's, I think, Tesham Satya Yuktanam, Bhajatam Pratipa Dhami. The knowledge is coming from Krishna. The understanding is coming from Krishna. Lord Brahma wanted to be saved from that pitfall of pride, although he was posted in the most exalted position within the universe. So contaminating. Of course, we can do it for service, and then we make a lot of advancement, but we have to do it for service. And we have to become, we have to be fixed. Anyway, it's my service, Bhagavatam, so we'll preach the Bhagavatam. It's so, again and again, it says in the Bhagavatam, it's so essential to have this knowledge for every position you could have in society, whether it's economic, administrative, brahminical, this knowledge must be there. O my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if equal in position. I shall be engaged in the different creation of different types of living entity. I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation. But I pray that this may not all give rise to pride, as if I were the supreme. Please, I'm praying for you that I'm praying for this. Do not let it give that sense of independence and pride. I am great. I think one time, I think Andrew was telling me, he went to one sadhu in Vrindavan, and the sadhu told him, don't think you're better than everyone or anyone. That conception that we have to have to practice devotion and enter into the spiritual world. Brahma is so powerful, but he wants to remember his position. Factually, Lord Brahma, the devotees of the Lord are engaged in a specific duty offered by the Lord, and thus such duties are successfully carried out without hindrance because they are ordained by the Lord. The credit of success goes not to the doer, but to the Lord. But persons with poor fund of knowledge take the credit of success into their own account and give nothing to the credit of the Lord. This is the symptom of the non-devotee class of men. So you can just see. You know, we have this responsibility to preach Krishna consciousness, to do something for Prabhupada. But the way we have to have that, you know, we have to hear this again and again because our natures are so much to take credit. We're conditioned since time immemorial to feed off of the sense of I'm the doer, success, get ahead in life. I just, a short one, I just remember, you know, when I was growing up and I went to this big department store with my mother, and there was a long line, and she said, just get in front of the line. I said, you know, I had a sense of dharma. No, why should I do that? She said, you know, we got to push your way ahead. You'll never get successful. You got to push your way ahead. You'll never get successful. This is the training. So tomorrow, we'll start the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam. The four nutshell verses that describe. First two verses are Sambandhagyan. And then Prayojanagyan is described in, Abhideyagyan. Knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, knowledge of activities in that relationship, and knowledge of the goal or result of that relationship and activities in that relationship. And I remember that one time or other I tried to understand them. I worked at it. Maybe I think I can get it again. Especially the second one is difficult, that analogy. There, you know, I think I have some sense of it. I think I have some speculation. You know, what it actually means, what Maya is. Okay, we'll end here. Any questions? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.